Hey everybody, welcome back to Mining Stock Daily. This is Trevor Hall. Today is Friday, February 22nd. Thank you for tuning in. We have an in-depth interview with the CEO of Western Copper and Gold today. That's Paul West Sells. We look forward to airing that interview where we talk about the casino project and some interesting insight into the market right now from the CEO's point of view. We'd like to thank all of our sponsors for supporting Mining Stock Daily. That does include Western Copper and Gold, Brixton Metals, Minera Alamos, and Integra Resources. Thank you so much for your support. We couldn't do it without you. So without further ado, we are going to step in with my conversation with Paul, and we will see you on the other side. Welcome, everybody. This is Trevor Hall with Mining Stock Daily. Sitting with me right now is Paul Wessels. He's the CEO of Western Copper and Gold. Western Copper and Gold is traded on the TSX and the New York Stock Exchange American with the symbol WRN. They are developing the casino project up in the Yukon. Paul, how are you today? Thanks for joining us.
Very good. It's a pleasure to be talking to you again, Trevor.
Yes, we always enjoy having you on. And the tides have somewhat turned a little bit with the market since the last time we spoke, so I thought I might talk to you a little bit about that. Sentiments towards gold and even copper has seemed to become bullish since we spoke. I believe it was in maybe November. As a CEO of a mine developer, what are some of the things you're seeing and what questions are you beginning to get asked with the overall scope of the market right now?
Sure. You know, why don't I start with copper and then I'll go into gold. Okay. You know, starting with copper, copper is a simple commodity. It's very supply demand driven, and so you know you just have to look at those sort of fundamentals, and it's a good predictor of where the price of copper is for the most part. But really anything that impacts those supply-demand fundamentals is really what tends to drive the copper price on a shorter-term basis, which, you know, shorter-term basis in the mining industry is, you know, sort of 6 months to a year. So what you've seen recently is if you look at the price of copper, it was sort of started off last year, 2018, on a nice trajectory. It was slowly going up, and it all sort of made sense because we needed some new mines to come online, and those mines needed a bit higher copper price. And then right in January, you saw the copper price begin to turn and go down. And that was really the result of the tariffs that were put on by the Trump administration onto China. Mm. And China consumes 50% of the world's copper, so that was a fair assessment. It was you know, growth is going to decrease in China as a result of these tariffs, and therefore price of copper started to drop. So as you said, we talked about that in November. What you've seen, of course, recently, and you know, taken right out of the headlines, is that things are looking, hopefully, a little bit better in terms of what's happening in China in terms of the tariffs. You know, there's negotiations underway with the U.S. administration in terms of coming up with some sort of trade deal. It's point one. And then, as you know, very recently, sort of, you know, this last week, what we saw was actually, even with the tariffs in place, a fairly decent numbers coming out of China, you know, just sort of indicating that, you know, maybe these tariffs are not going to have, even if they don't get to some sort of deal with the U.S. administration, are not having as large of an effect as originally thought on the copper price.
Okay. So do you think it's going to take a deal between the U.S. and Chinese governments to let the price of the spot price of copper kind of move a little bit more, or is there more to it than just that?
I think that's it. I think that's the only thing that's holding it back. You know, it feels very range bound right now. You know, I think we sort of see it hit about 285 and People get nervous and sort of it sort of goes down. It doesn't drop much below sort of 270, but it seemed very range bound ever since the sort of tariffs have come in around that. And, you know, keep in mind that it was 320, I'm going to say, in the first half of 2018. And you know, I maintain, and if you sort of crunch the numbers and you look at the next slate of copper projects that need to come online to fulfill the, you know, sort of predicted demand, you really need 350 copper, and we'll get there. The question is always when. I think that if we see some deal come out of US and China here in the next, well, I guess the deadline is March 1st, but there's probably, sounds like there might be an extension on that. If we see a deal out of that, I think we'll see that before the end of the year. If we don't see a deal, we'll see, you know, let's see what happens.
Sure.
I guess is what I'd say.
Well,
I don't see it dropping below the bottom end of the range it's in right now, which is sort of this sort of 270 level.
Okay. I do want to ask you about gold, because obviously that's the hot metal of the week.
Yes.
But first, I want to quickly ask you about projects that are in the pipeline that have enough copper to actually become economic. I mean, Casino appears to have 4.5 billion pounds of copper. What else on a global scale in development right now can even come close to those averages of proven and probable copper reserves right now?
Yeah, you know, this is one of the themes, you know, when I'm talking to investors about our project is that if you look at what's available out there, what the projects that can supply that pipeline, and particularly the ones that are in control by juniors, there's about a dozen of them. So there's really not that many that are out there. And so that's step one, is there's just not that many. Step two is you start to look at where these are, and we being up in the Yukon, mining friendly jurisdiction, I mean, Canada's mining friendly in general, and the Yukon is even, I would say, a step above that in terms of being mining friendly. So it makes a good difference being up in the Yukon. And so it puts us in a very, very positive position, I think, in terms of the next set of copper assets. Now, some of these big companies have some copper assets squirreled away that they're working on that certainly, you know, I guess will compete with Casino. But there's some of these large copper companies that don't have any of that. And so that's, you know, where I think we might fit into the mix going forward.
Okay. So let's do talk about gold. Obviously,
yeah.
We're seeing, I believe the bull flag is up on gold officially, finally. How about the gold conversations with Casino? Are those separate from the copper the discussions you're having about copper, or are they kind of intertwined anymore? You know, tell me what you're seeing.
Yeah, I mean there's sort of a really interesting time in the gold space right now, because you have on one hand you have gold finally breaking out a bit, and you know that this is sort of for the standard reasons. I mean, gold goes up when you know confidence in U.S. dollar goes down, and that's exactly what we're seeing. The interesting thing for me is that, in addition to that, you have these mega mergers, right? So you had the Barrick Randgold and you had the Newmont Goldcorp mergers, and those absolutely changed the landscape for people like, for companies like us that have a gold deposit that has 9 million ounces of gold in reserve plus an overall resource of 18 million ounces. So a significant copper gold resource. Gold, just gold resource. And again, you look at the scarcity value of assets like that, and they are incredibly rare. Mm-hmm. When we looked at just the gold, and we looked at gold resources controlled by junior mining companies. So, you know, again, majors, they maybe have a couple, but they don't have a lot, and a lot of them are active mines. Juniors usually have the development projects such as ourselves or earlier stage exploration. We are number six in terms of the largest gold projects. And, you know, I'm not going to run through them all, but if you look at some of the one through five, some of these have got really bad permitting issues. Some of them are in jurisdictions that certainly I don't think Newmont or Barrick or any large gold company shareholders really want them to be investing in. And so, again, having this large asset in a great location such as the Yukon is, you know, really our story, and really I consider the reason why I'm a big investor in our company, and why others should be big investors as well.
One of the things that I've heard is those mega companies now perhaps won't even look at projects without a proven 15% IRR hurdle. And I guess I don't have the paperwork in front of me, but what is currently, what's the casino's IRR on the project as is?
Yeah, I mean, so we've got our last corporate publication, which was when we crunched the numbers, and that was actually at lower than today's commodity prices, it was a 24% IRR. So, you know, we've got a nice, and that's after tax, a nice good size IRR. And the other thing is that, and you've heard this come both out of, you know, Bristow at, with Barrick and also at a Newmont, they're not opposed to copper. You know, I think that Bristow actually said that, you know, he considers copper sort of a bit of the new gold. And you know, both of those companies have copper mines, have a copper component to what they produce. So you look at an asset like Casino, and certainly, you know, it's as these companies, which are just sort of getting their feet under them, let's be honest. I mean, these are mergers that are, I mean, Barrick just finished theirs, and Newmont is in the middle of theirs, as they begin to look at what makes sense going forward. You know, I'm certainly we'll be chatting with them.
Yeah. So the big land package directly to the west and northwest of Casino is Goldcorp's coffee property, and I would assume that in time people will be erasing Goldcorp on their maps and replacing it with Newmont. But how has that merger between Newmont and Goldcorp changed Casino, and has any of those conversations changed that you're having with investors or people potentially looking at a JV or a partnership with Casino?
Yeah, I mean, we, you know, if you look at the two projects, so you look at Casino and you look at Coffee, and as you pointed out, the proximity cannot be overemphasized. I mean, we literally share a claim boundary. So, you know, it is sort of the same area. There's a lot of synergies between the two projects. If you were to bring them into, you know, sort of a one sort of project, and there are a lot around size and overhead, and, you know, they've got a heap leach, we've got a heap leach, you know, we've got sort of potentially a better road access. So the sort of synergies there are really sort of endless. And you know, we knew the people from Goldcorp very well, and, you know, talked to them a number of times. And, you know, I think they certainly recognize those synergies. So going forward, I think that if you look at that district, it's a very interesting to sort of think of it as a district. And so I guess now Newmont is in a very good position in that they have one of the key parts of that. We're another key part of it. There's lots of exploration potential in the area. And the other key thing, and I mentioned this a lot, and I had a really interesting question. Someone was talking to me, and they said, "Why, you know, why does the Yukon get so much press in the mining business?" And I said, "The main reason it does is because it's just so incredibly underexplored." Mm. So if you look at districts like where we are, you know, we've got the coffee project, we've got Casino, which are two great projects, but you know, the potential in that area as a district is just incredibly high because the district has not seen the money put into the ground that, say, Northern Nevada or, you know, the Gold Belt in Ontario has seen.
Yeah. But would you agree that the continuing challenge of operating and exploring in the Yukon is always going to be infrastructure and access? I mean, is that something that's still, you know, investors of resources and mining projects are still struggling with?
Yeah, I think maybe it's always the interesting, the conversations I have, because I think that there's certainly an investor perception that's a limitation. You know, it's, oh, you're in the north and it's cold all the time, and how do you get in? And you know, you don't have the as much of a road network as some of these other jurisdictions. And I think that's partially true. You know, you look at the winters and the season that you have there, it's not too different than Northern British Columbia, which has seen a fair bit of exploration over the years. And, you know, I think the other thing is that if you look at, you know, when we were doing exploration and drilling there, I mean, what you can do, what you can fly in and the ability to do fairly large exploration programs with fly-in rigs and setting up camps and having them serviced by airstrips, and really the sort of, you know, the dropping of costs of exploration that's serviced by air has been quite significant. And so you're looking at, you know, exploration costs up there that aren't significantly higher, I think, than what you're seeing in terms of, you know, Northern British Columbia, for example.
Okay. I'd want to ask you about some applications and permitting that's been happening in December. You and your team were working on completing the environmental assessment for Casino. Can you provide an update on as to where that work is at the time?
Yeah. We're working through the panel review process, and how the panel review process works is really the first phase of that was coming up with a list of everything that we needed to submit and we needed to do. And because we were sort of in a different process before, we had 90% of that work complete. But there was, as a result of that first phase, it's like, okay, here's the list of what needs to be submitted. And on that list was a couple of key things that we hadn't done. And one of them was this work on tailings. And this was the best available tailings study that we completed in November. And so we completed that in November, you know, very happy with the outcome. We had great participation from the First Nations in particular, and the government and the regulatory agencies. They looked at a lot. They started with 495 different options for tailings and mine waste and really ended up with one option. Now that that's done, we need to take that, we need to do the engineering around that, and then put that together and bring that forward in terms of the application and moving forward. So that's the next step on the permitting. You know, looking at that step, you know, the other thing that we're toying around with here right now is that because that's new piece of engineering that really needs to go into the project, and there's a few other sort of small things, you know, is this the time to sort of update the feasibility study? We're very happy, you know, and absolutely from an engineering perspective, with the exception of the tailings facility, you know, our confidence around our feasibility study is high. That said, it's, you know, 2013 is when we issued it, and, you know, that's 6 years ago. So certainly some of the costs have gone up and some of the costs have gone down, and it would be useful to sort of go back and reprice a lot of that stuff and reissue that study.
What was the base case spot price of gold that you used back in 2013?
Oh, well, you know, it was interesting because the spot price of gold, I believe, was $1,400. Mm. However, the Canadian dollar was at par. So, if you look at what the base price of gold is now in Canadian dollars, it's significantly higher than what we used back then.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. For example.
Okay. Yeah. And just kind of off the cuff question, when you are mm-hmm. looking at feasibility studies, what's most important to you, the average cost of production or the all-in sustaining costs per ounce?
You know, I'm an old engineer, right? So sure. I tend to not look at the all-in sustaining costs and cash costs too much. I mean, they're useful metrics. I think they're more useful when you actually have an operating asset. With a development asset, I like to really sort of roll my sleeves up and dig right in and sort of take a look at, you know, what is it costing them to mine a ton of ore? What is it costing them to process a ton of ore? Those are numbers that that you know you can compare metrics with, that you can take a look around and say, well, is that what, you know, the guy up the road is mining a ton of ore for? And you know, is that what, you know, a copper concentrator of this size operates for, say, in central British Columbia? And those are sort of the benchmarks that I look at. And then you know, create numbers from there. So that's how I look at projects. And, you know, certainly when you look at our project, if you build things up that way, what you'll find is that, you know, you compare us to Mount Milligan or Highland Valley Copper in terms of mining and processing costs, and we'll come in, and those are, you know, two large copper mines, copper gold mines in central BC, and we come in, you know, very, very well in terms of a comp.
Sure. Where are you at with finances and money in the bank? Are you supported for the full year of 2019 or longer? What do you think?
I mean, if you look at last year, you know, our effort was around this tailings work. We burnt through about $3 million. And so if we're starting this year with five, and so that's easily gets us through this year and into next year. And depending on what we do, you know, we aren't looking to necessarily go out and raise money right now. But, you know, if plans change, then we'll look at that.
Sure. Well, we're in like an interesting space, guns. From what I'm observing, the market is genuinely supporting and rewarding discoveries and, you know, good low-cost production. And unfortunately, casinos right in between there. And so it's interesting to see, you know, what companies like Western Copper and Gold are going to do, you know, in the year to come, knowing or, you know, expecting that we continue to see a bull market in the gold, perhaps even the copper price. But what does that mean as far as what's the management's plan at the end of the year? In case something were not to happen or plans wouldn't go the way they would originally plan.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and so you look at, you know, you look at Western and so what's your investment thesis in the company? And, you know, I would say that the main reason you buy is I actually think right now the main reason you buy is because of the gold space. I was shocked. I was really shocked. And when I looked at the number of big gold deposits out there and how few there are. And, you know, I certainly encourage your listeners to go to our website and take a look at our corporate presentation, because we've got a great map that just absolutely illustrates this. So as as these big gold companies, you know, get their feet under them, they're, you know, going to have to come knocking. Is point one. And point two really is that we, as a company, one of the things we're incredibly proud of is how disciplined we have been in terms of, you know, shareholder value and not really running out and raising money and diluting our shareholders unnecessarily. We raised $3 million at the beginning of last year. The time before that we raised money was in 2010. And so we've been able to sort of keep that share count low. We take a look at whatever we do needs to add value. per share and significant value per share. So whatever we do over this next year, that's the metric that it's going to be judged on. And you know, our share price is moderately healthy right now. But, you know, if it gets any worse, we'll just, you know, sit on our fingers and wait for it to improve before we dare go out and raise any more capital.
The annual Prospectors and Developers Association of Canada conference is coming up first week of March in Toronto. I'm looking forward to seeing you there. What are some things you're preparing for PDAC? What are some of the conversations you think you'll be expected to hear while you're there?
You know, I think that, we'll be at PDAC again this year and certainly looking forward to it. I think that, again, the emphasis is there's really going to be a view look around at the gold space. And, you know, I've been talking a lot about the majors, but are these new big mega majors. But, you know, these mid-tiers now, like what's going to happen with the mid-tiers in terms of them, you know, becoming the new old Goldcorp or the new old Barrick, you know, where they sort of sit in that position. So that might be M&A, that might be a merger of a couple of them. It might be acquisitions. You know, certainly, again, you know, Western with 9 million ounces of gold in reserves and 18 overall is an interesting part of that picture, could be an interesting part of that picture. So that's been sort of some of the conversations I've been having over the last little while, and I expect that that will continue at the PDAC conference.
Okay. Paul, what else did I forget to ask you while I have you?
I think that sort of got it. You know, I guess the only other thing that I throw out there is, and you know this, I mean, you know, you've been up in the Yukon. You know, I can't emphasize enough that this is a jurisdiction that has, you know, full government support around the mining industry. And it's easy to say that, but, you know, we can point to the fact that they made an announcement, you know, a little over a year ago here now, in terms of infrastructure. Prime Minister of Canada came up to town and announced three roads, and one of those roads is right to our casino mine. So, as you said earlier in the show here, some of the knocks on the Yukon are infrastructure related, and the fact that the government's going to be building a road part of the way to our mine certainly states that the government's listening. They're trying to do something about it, and they're trying to do something about it specifically for the casino project and Western Copper and Gold.
Paul, thank you so much for your time and joining us once again for Mining Stock Daily. I look forward to seeing you in person in Toronto over PDAC, and I look forward to that time. And please be safe and be grand until then.
Okay, sounds great. Great talking to you.
That's Paul West-Sells. He is the CEO and president of Western Copper and Gold. Western Copper and Gold Corp. trades on the TSX and the NYSE American with the ticker symbol WRN.
Mining Stock Daily and its affiliates are not responsible for any loss arising from any investment decision in connection with the material presented herein.